And I think Mitsugi should go first. Because his nips are sizzling right now.
My nips are sizzling steaks.
You need to chill them nips.
Someone get the A1 sauce.
By Kotoko, one of Mitsugi's favorite artists, if I might add.
Yeah, she's pretty good. She's getting old, though.
She's still hot, though, because she's Asian.
She's pretty hot. She's like 30.
That's the way it works.
That is the way it works.
In the blood.
Hi, I'm Asian. I look like I'm 20 until I turn 90, and then I look like I'm 70 for the rest of my life.
Actually, I think Kotoko is one of those artists that doesn't give her age online.
Yeah, probably because she's like already 80. She's like, I just look like I'm 20. I'm gonna ride this shit pony until it crashes. This is the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast, episode number 63. You can find us at aaapodcast.com, iTunes, Facebook. If you search for Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast, you will find us on either. www.addnetwork.net and thenerdnexus.com. With us today, we have a full roundtable, but most notably, someone has returned to us.
I came back from the dark side.
Yes.
Or the dead.
I expected you to say dead. I came back from the dead. The Black Lagoon, actually.
You came back from the Black Lagoon?
Uh-huh.
Like Daisy Dukes?
We're happy you made it back safely.
Yes.
I didn't want to come back. Revy was hot.
Oh, wow. Of course, we also have Kimiko with us.
Hello. I'm playing with their kitty.
That's what she said.
Hello, Neil.
Kimiko?
Yo, keep your pants on.
I love it when you play with my pussy. I really do. It enjoys it so much.
Wow. I expected you to say he.
Some people are going to be replaying that over and over again.
Probably.
Yeah, I would.
It's the highlight of my evening, Chiaki.
Of course, Hitake is with us, and Mitsugi.
I like Daisy Dukes.
I know you do. We just had this conversation the other day. Mitsugi recently learned what Daisy Dukes are from Katy Perry's California Girl song. And now it's his new favorite thing to say. Daisy Dukes.
You said it first.
Daisy Dukes bikinis.
Anyway.
That's what they are.
So who are our new forum members this week?
Our new forum members are default name. No, that's not actually the default name for the forums. That is really default name.
I applaud you, sir. Or madam.
Lady Phantom Hive.
Oh, Black Butler fan.
Oh my god, start running, because the apocalypse 369 has come to our forums!
We welcome you.
Well, it's not even December 12th,
20. It's not even 2012 yet,
2012,
right? Right?
That's what I was going for.
We at the Addicts do shit early. Patty Allen and Bob Not K joined our forum. So
Bob is not K.
Bob is not K. He's not K at all. So welcome to the forums, you guys. Great to have you. And actually, great to have you.
You guys are the bomb. Thanks for joining.
The bomb diggity dog, man.
Bob not K has already been pretty active on our forums, so.
You guys are awesome.
We applaud you too.
Newsflash.
Yep. Newsflash.
So what are we doing today?
Alright, we are going to have a topic that was suggested by Kimiko. So we are talking about anime composers and musical scores, which is a topic that a lot of us here know a lot about, being that everyone here, aside from me, had some kind of formal musical involvement in college.
Mm-hmm.
I just have an appreciation. We are also going to do impressions on Mototoraburu and Tagai no no Chi, followed by some reviews on Kashimashi, and I am finally reviewing the much-requested Bakemonogatari. So, without further ado, Kimiko. You has like music?
I has like music very muchly.
Yay!
I don't really understand what happened. Jacuzzi? I'm not Jacuzzi Splot!
Jacuzzi Splot doesn't like music! Even though he's
too scared to like music! I don't even understand. Sweet.
Stop it.
So, I'm sure most of you are aware that scores are a vital part of any sort of media.
And for those of you who aren't aware, a score is a musical piece.
Thank you, Chiaki.
I'm helping out the musical literate here.
Those people.
Thank you, Chiaki. You can find music playing in the background of anything. Video games, TV shows, movies,
commercials,
porn.
sorry. I'm back.
And specifically anime.
Because this is an anime podcast.
Yeah.
And that's just how it works.
Where
exactly.
We occasionally talk about porn.
Occasionally. But what you guys might not know or recognize is how seriously vital it is. I don't know if you've ever done this as an experiment, but I have, where you take a clip that's particularly intense and take out the audio for it or the music for it. Everything that might have been intense at that moment drops by, like, 90%.
Think about how much often, like, you link music to a feeling or a person. It's just so iconic. I mean, think of really iconic, like, few chords, like, dun, 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 dun. Everyone can finish that.
Yep. Exactly.
Everyone can finish
exactly.
That.
Wait, that's from Star Trek, right?
Totally!
Fail.
Someone's gonna come on the forum.
I'm kidding!
We know.
We know,
but no, Star Trek would be ba da 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 da. All right. Anyway, so
we're
no,
not
but
geeks of all flavors, not at all
flavors. Oh,
all flavors. That's right.
Let's
you
let
heard
the
it here.
Four members mull that one over through text.
But no, Chiaki's got a very good point. Motifs that a lot of composers come up with can become iconic. They can become something that everyone around the world knows. A lot of them, John Williams can be thanked for, like Star Wars, Jurassic Park,
E.T.
Oh my god, E.T.
Some of the Harry Potter music.
A lot of the Harry Potter music, mm-hmm. At least the first three.
Yep.
But anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about the lesser known
Japanese animation!
The lesser known composers of various anime. Specifically, I think my two favorite, I know you have two or more that are, like, lesser known, but Yoko Kanno and Joe Hisaishi.
I wouldn't say those are lesser known. In fact,
she has lesser known. Those are the two most well known, but they're, you know.
Oh, yeah, obscurity. No, we have to cover
you do.
Them.
Oh, yes.
I found two lesser known that I like.
I'm going to do that right now.
I'll cover that later.
Okay.
I'm talking.
So, let's start it off talking about a little bit about Yoko Kanno, who I believe we have hit on a couple of times, describing how
You've
she...
You've hit on Yoko Kanno?
I have.
Oh, you're
I
so
have
lucky!
So much.
Sorry, that's gonna be...
I want her to have my babies.
That's gonna be my role for this episode. I'm just gonna sit here and make smart-ass comments.
I think you should. I'd be offended if you didn't. But anyway, we have said before that Yoko Kanno literally vomits beautiful music. And it's true! It's true. She can walk into
Instead
a studio.
It's that noise, though. It's bebop music. Exactly. Bebop music comes out.
That sounded like an old man.
Some of the things, like Bebop, that she has done, Wolf's Reign,
Ghost in the Shell,
Ghost in the Shell, mm. Cowboy Bebop. She's also done, what's the one?
Escaflowne.
She's
done
Escaflowne. Aquarion. She's got her hands in a lot of good anime.
Not to mention, like, I think a true mark of an artist of any medium is how versatile they are.
Very true.
And I mean, she has things that are like hardcore jazz in, you know, Bebop.
Mm-hmm.
All the way to things like Escaflowne.
Well, she has her own band.
Well, yeah, I mean, she has her own band, which does rock, and then she has, like, these beautiful orchestral pieces, like Escaflowne. So, I mean, it's like, it's not like she's just, I make really good jazz.
Mm, she's, I make really good everything.
Yes.
And she's got a lot of really good people at her disposal, too, like Steve Conte.
Oh, did you guys mention Ghost in the Shell?
I'm so in love with him.
Okay. Yeah, that is some good music.
Beautiful voice.
Steve Conte's done quite a few things with her, too, though. He's done more than a couple or a handful of songs for Cowboy Bebop. He what's the, is it Razaphon?
Razaphon.
Yeah, there's an opener for Razaphon, I believe.
Which one is that?
Steve Conte and somebody else, Maya Sakamoto.
Yes, yes.
Did the opener for that or the closer that for that, and that was written by
Maya Sakamoto is very famous.
Mm-hmm. That was written also by Yoko Kanno.
Yeah, yeah, she kind of is.
But yeah, so Yoko Kanno. I think we should play some of Yoko Kanno's music
in the background.
In the background, whatever you're listening to right now, ladies and gentlemen, is Yoko Kanno. It's good. And then a little bit about Joe Hisaishi. If you are unfamiliar, he does all of Miyazaki's film's music.
Mm-hmm.
All of it.
I should speak enough right there.
Yeah.
Except for his synthesizer years.
Oh, yeah, the Nausicaä music.
Yeah.
there's non-synthesizer music in Nausicaä.
No, there is, but like...
Non-synthesizer music, like the ending theme and stuff,
is fantastic. Really good,
but like the
synth music.
The synthesizer music, like when she's going through like the forest and stuff like that on her glider, that's...
80s Japanese synth.
Yes.
Delicious.
I'm sure at the time it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then he got better.
Joe Hisaishi does Takahata's music also, and every time I show the My Neighbor the Big Yamadas, my first 10 minutes at any of the cons in my panel, I'm just blown away all over again by how good the musical score is for that movie.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Even though no one's ever seen it. It's like, no one's ever seen that movie. I don't know how it gets skipped over.
I think it's the animation style. Don't be fooled by the animation style, my
friends.
Don't be
fooled. Don't be close-minded.
Yeah.
Like me.
yeah, don't be like Kimiko over here.
Yeah. Ooh.
You don't want to be a Kimiko. No, I'm just
kidding. No, you don't. You really don't want to be a Kimiko, ladies and gentlemen. It's not worth your time. Anyway, that was cruel to myself for a second. Anyway, so... the one thing that I would say about Joe Hisaishi, that it's not necessarily a negative, because a lot of composers are like this, is he has a very distinct sound.
Yes.
Mm. Very similar to, like, how Danny Elfman, you can always tell Danny Elfman's music from anyone else's. Danny Elfman's the one who did Beetlejuice, the Edward Scissorhands, anything with Tim Burton.
Well, it's like anything. I mean, I can peg my, like Chopin in a list of classical pieces. I mean,
well, yeah. I mean, a lot of them have their very similar style, especially with classical composers, where they've got particular motifs that they like, or they've got particular, like, they fancy counterpoint versus, you know, something else. But when you've got other big-name composers like John Williams, who's going from Memoirs of a Geisha to Jurassic Park to E.T., and it's so different... which they're, you know, them being versatile is what really makes them, I guess, more popular to other directors.
Well, it allows them to apply their music to a broader range of works, too.
Yeah. See, like, Tim Burton and Danny Elfman are always collaborative force, because Tim Burton always requires that sort of sound for his movies.
Right.
So, in some level, I'd say Takahata and Miyazaki always required Joe Hisaishi's sound. Because it's so similar.
Yeah.
That's interesting, though, because a lot of the Ghibli movies are very different, though. I mean, if you think about it, you've got one movie that's about a giant fluff ball who flies around on the top, and then you've got another movie where kids are starving in World War II Japan, Then you've got, like, My Neighbor the Amadas, which is just about a normal family.
The movies are all different.
There's witches on a broomstick.
I know, so, I know.
I mean, in a way, maybe, perhaps he's... The movies are different, just like Jurassic Park and whatever the other...
Memoirs of a Geisha.
Memoirs of a Geisha are very different, but, you know, he applies the same type of sound to each
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Because, I mean, like, if you look at it in Tim Burton's direction, Big Fish is very different from Edward Scissorhands, is very different from Corpse Bride.
Oh, I never saw that, Big Fish.
It was such a good movie.
Oh, was that good?
It was really cool. Ewan McGregor's fantastic. But anyway.
We saw Unstoppable on Friday. That was good.
Yeah, that was good.
It's the Denzel Washington movie.
The train
movie.
One?
Oh!
Yeah, the Denzel Washington... The new Denzel movie with the train Unstoppable is quite good. It has the guy
nice.
From... It has the kid from the new Star Trek movie in it. Kirk.
Oh, Chris Ooh. Pine?
Chris
I do
Pine's
love Chris Pine.
Yeah,
not
good.
Nearly as
good.
Much as Zachary Quinto. But, you know, I digress. I'm a Spock fan.
Mm.
Moving on.
Weirdo.
Crazy.
I like Scotty.
Nah.
Just saying.
Live long and prosper. Bitch! No. We just flipped each other off.
West Side! That was what you did in my room.
I did.
You were like, live long and prosper.
West Side! Anyway, so, Hatake, I know you have quite the list of anime soundtracks on your iTunes.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna talk about... First of all, Yoshimori Makoto, because holy cow.
Who's that? I've never heard of that person.
That person did the music for both Bakano and Durarara.
Oh yeah, Bakano does have some good music.
Bakano has some incredible music.
Can't say I know the other guy.
Yeah. The other guy?
Or, can't say I've seen the other anime.
Oh, Durarara. Durarara.
That's some pretty good music, Durarara.
Durarara has really good music, but not as good as Bakano. It's just it's like modern day Bakano music, basically.
Yeah, Bakano's music was very time period appropriate, which made it so fantastic for the series. I loved it.
Fantastic soundtrack.
Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
You played that at Jazz Band.
We did play that in Jazz Band.
I use it
during
our news segment sometimes.
You do?
It's background music.
Good.
It's such
you
a
should.
Good song.
It's fantastic.
I guess off the top of my head, Akihiko Matsumoto did the soundtrack for Summer Wars. Which is
fantastic.
Probably some of the best music I have heard in the past year or so. It's, like, it's breathtakingly beautiful, also really badass.
Didn't that movie just get nominated for an Oscar?
Yep. Well, not nominated yet. It's in the pool for a potential
It's won
nomination.
Everything else. Might as well get the Oscar, too.
Oh, my gosh. But it's up against Toy Story 3. It's not going to win.
Toy Story 3 was not that good.
Still.
It wasn't anything.
Toy Story 3 is American, though.
Yeah. I'm just going to mention that Takayuki Negishi, You Are My Hero, Please Never Stop Writing Music.
Why is that?
This is, like, on, like, legitimately half of my top 25 most played playlist is stuff by this dude.
Oh, Cardcaptor Sakura.
Nice.
Yeah.
Namasune has an amazing soundtrack.
It really does.
It's fantastic.
Oh, he did Tokyo Mew Mew. That's why he's so good.
And
One Piece,
fantastic
theme song. It's for We Are.
Oh,
that song is so good.
Tokyo Mew Mew, really seriously.
No, but seriously,
Sakura Wars.
We Are for One Piece.
That
makes my life. I did not know that. Thank you for making my life.
So who else?
Who else? Shiro Hamaguchi, Kimiko, and I. Love you.
Right,
okay,
so you
well,
both have
you
Shido
can,
Hamaguchi.
You can talk about
for probably different reasons.
Yeah.
So you guys like it because it did big wind up, and you guys are fangirls. Chiaki likes it. Why?
I like it because Shido
That's
Hamaguchi.
Why. I didn't make the connection.
Did
I apologize.
All of the arranged works for Final Fantasies from 7 up until 11.
I didn't make the connection.
He didn't do the original, he didn't do, obviously, the original composer is Nobuo Uematsu, but
yeah.
Most of the arranged versions that people are familiar with the piano versions, or sometimes the orchestral version,
That's
obviously
fantastic.
Not always, is him.
Oh my god.
That is quite a jump.
He also did, Shiro Hamaguchi also did, aside from One Piece, he did Oh My Goddess, Oh My Goddess, Rosero plus Vampire, which I know a lot of people on our forums are a fan of.
Yeah.
Sakura Wars.
Oh, wow.
He did arrangement for. The animes he did composition. Sakura Wars he did arrangement.
So he does a lot of arrangements.
Yeah.
Arrangements just don't really impress me that much, though.
They impress me.
Arrangements.
They're pivotal.
They're
pivotal, but it's not like you're inventing something. You're reinventing.
I give him like a partial score as a composer, but I give him full marks as an arranger. Because I think I agree, arrangement doesn't weigh as heavily as composition, but at the same time, it's like, you hear, it's kind of like mashups and things like that. You hear them, or like remixes. You hear a remix and you're like, oh my god, that remix is so cool, but I could totally do that. And
no,
then you get
you
on your
can't.
Computer to do the remix and you're like, yeah, this is not as easy as I thought.
I'll give you an example. This week on Glee.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry. This is... No. They did a male a cappella arrangement of Katy Perry's Teenage Dream.
Oh, wow.
It was the most spectacular thing. I'm not a big fan of Katy Perry, all things considered.
I only like California
Girls. Just getting Daisy Dukes.
But that arrangement of that piece was absolutely phenomenal. It was just so much fun to listen to, and it was so tight. The chords sounded almost digital. They were that tight, where it's the overlapping of dissonance, kind of like Eric Whitaker's style when he writes choral music, how he'll put just enough dissonance that it still sounds good, but it's almost impossible to, like, tell you what type of chord that is by the time he's done.
For the people that are listening that don't know what dissonance is...
Dissonance is when two keys are, like, if you're looking at a piano, there are two keys that are either one note apart, or like one key apart, or no keys apart. They're right next to each other. So
you
it's basically...
You pick it out because it doesn't quite sound right.
Exactly. It sounds like you're clashing, basically. But some composers have found a way to work around the dissonance to take that clash and make it sound cool.
Yeah.
They do that in techno a lot, actually. But arrangement...
More modern.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. An arrangement can completely alter a piece and make it something entirely different and... oftentimes more impressive on some levels.
Well, they rearrange music all the time in the Final Fantasies, like in the Zelda games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many times you hear the same Zelda theme rearranged over and over again for like
exactly.
different settings?
The most recent Star Trek movie, they took the same motif and just rearranged it about 7-8 times.
That's pretty cool.
It was really nifty.
Could do it for James Bond too.
Oh yeah. So you have another composer on our list of awesome composers of awesome, right, Chiaki?
I do. I added Yoshihisa Hirano. And I put this composer on for two reasons. One, because I think he's incredibly versatile. Like, his first anime was Beyblade back in 2001. He did a few others that might
well,
not...
Well, that's a reason to like him. Beyblade right there.
That might not be very impressive.
I'm sold.
Like, he did Midori Days in 04 and things like that, but he really starts to pick up, I think, in 2006. He did the orchestration for the Final Fantasy game Dirge of Cerberus. did the Death Note, the original Death Note
Oof.
Soundtrack. And
oh,
Death
wow,
Note
that's
has
good music.
Great orchestrals.
Oh my god.
Not only that, but great guitar stuff.
The themes.
Yeah.
The themes in there
All
are
the themes are fantastic.
Like, intense.
Oh, the themes of Death Note are hardcore, and I think the orchestration's fantastic. And I mean, since then he's done the orchestrations for Final Fantasy 13. He did music for Hajime no Ippo, New Challenger. Mm.
I can only remember one song from that anime, and it was the opening, and he didn't do it.
And he's even done the really most recent esteemed anime.
Just being honest.
Chubra. But, I mean, that's one thing that we were talking about before. You know, on one side, it's good. Like, this guy obviously has a knack for great orchestral music. But, you know, dude's got to make a living. Dude's got to earn the buck. He's not like Joe Hisaishi that's just like, I'll work with one studio and that's okay by me because that studio is going to pay me bank. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he's obviously versatile enough to go from something like Beyblade to Death Note to Chubra. So, I love Death Note. I think the orchestrations in it is fantastic.
Well, it's good to see that somebody was sleeping their way up the hierarchy ladder. Beyblade to Death Note. Get
yeah.
it? Yeah, got it.
It's like, what?
I don't know.
I only have one that I care to mention, and it's the guy who did the music, all of Satoshi Kon's music. Susumu
oh, yeah.
Hidesawa
oh, wow.
did the music for Millennium Actress, Paprika, Paranoia Agent, and Berserk.
Those have great music.
So the guy's
really
got kind
does.
Of a limited repertoire, aside from having a really badass photo on this website. Mysterious. You find that it's very common, I think, that certain directors will find a composer that works for them, and they will continue to hire them over and over again. Or a lot of times it happens because certain directors will belong to certain studios, and more likely the studio also has the services of a particular composer, and so they'll utilize both of those in tandem. And that's probably the case with Joe Hisaishi and Miyazaki.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's probably... It depends on how big the director is. I mean, obviously, if you're a director just starting out, you're going to use what your studio has available to you, because that'll probably be the cheapest way out to go, too. But, I mean, if you're big, I mean, I couldn't imagine someone like George Lucas, you know, working with anyone other than... What's his face?
George Lucas... George Lucas worked with John Williams, mm-hmm. no?
Yes, John Williams.
Okay.
I was judging you.
It's fine.
It's okay. No, I...
No, I suck at names. But, like, I mean, I'm sure, like, Lucas has Williams on speed dial. I mean,
definitely.
If Lucas was gonna do, like, a movie, like, a random movie...
He's probably sleeping with his wife.
He'd be like...
Dude.
What?
Why?
So you guys just pulled up another guy here that I already had on the list.
Yeah. We really need to talk about him.
Chiaki, I think, put... Or did you put him on the list?
No, you... Mitsuki
I had him on the
list
for a different anime that you got than you guys. I put this man named Taku Iwasaki on the list because now and then here and there has great music.
So does but freaking Gurren Lagann.
This guy's got maybe one of the most impressive resumes of any composer out there. If you just look down the list, you've got Get Backers, Gurren Lagann,
oh, Black Butler, Black Cat,
Katana Gatari, right. Origin, Spirits of the Past, Now and Then Here and There, Read or Die. Read or Die the OVA, which has great music.
Samurai X. That's another thing we use
for
Samurai X.
Trust and Betrayal, which is maybe one of the best animes.
The reason I looked him up was for Soul Eater, mm-hmm. was because that's some fantastic music. And his collaborations on Soul Eater were one of the things that I loved. He worked with people like DJ Shinya, Lotus Juice, Nishin Okana, Sphere of the Influence, Stance Punks. He used a lot of rap, which was really cool to me.
Yeah, he did that in Gurren
Lagann. And all of it
too.
Was in English, which was also pretty awesome. I don't know, he's got a great knack for doing orchestral music on top of hip-hop, on top of rap, on top of just, I think there's even some jazz in
he's
this.
He's very versatile. Yeah.
Very versatile, and he'll be versatile within one anime,
like,
which is really
honestly
cool.
Honestly, like Yoko Kanno, very, very much.
But whereas Yoko Kanno does, like, a million pieces of the same genre for one show, mm-hmm. he'll be like, I feel like this scene needs a little bit of country flair, and this scene needs a little bit of jazz flair, and this scene needs a little bit of rap flair.
Yep.
It's really cool.
Like, seriously, if you haven't been lucky enough to see either Soul Eater or Gurren Lagann, I mean, like, granted, it's Gurren Lagann, everyone's seen it, but listen to the music, guys. It's so good.
And that's something to be said, too, in general. Even if you've seen the show,
listen.
Go back and listen to the OST soundtrack, because when you're watching the show, you're doing so much. You know, you're reading the subtitles, you're watching the animation, you're...
Who reads subtitles?
Well, if you're not reading with subtitles, you're
listening to what's being spoken.
You're watching the actual animation. You're putting the story together in your head. I mean, you're doing it all subconsciously, but among those many things, the music is being interpreted too. So it does what it's supposed to do. It contributes to the whole product.
The best scores are the ones where you don't recognize that they're there.
Yes. But they still make you feel.
Just so we don't get flamed, this guy also did Witch Hunter Robin. And Yakitate Japan.
Oh, yeah.
There's someone out there going, oh my god, what about the bakery
he also
show?
Did this one.
The bakery show. What's it called? Oh, and he did Persona Trinity Soul, which kind of brings me to another point. Shoji Meguro, this isn't an anime composer, but does all of the music for the Shin Megami Tensei games.
Oh my gosh, it is fantastic.
Especially Persona 3 has probably the.
Persona 4 has a good soundtrack.
Outside of like. Stuff done by Square Enix, I'd say maybe the one of the best soundtracks out there.
People underestimate the soundtrack for video games sometimes.
And if we're talking about video games, Nobuo Uematsu. That should be all I have to say. If you don't know who he is, lock yourself in your room and educate yourself.
Just kill yourself.
Dude.
You should just not show your face to the world.
Go play Drink the Stuff Under the Sink.
I'm raising my hand because we're talking about video games. Harry Gregson Williams, thank you. Metal Gear music.
Oh, yeah.
Also all the music for Narnia, but...
No, I think that's...
Yeah, so next time you're playing a song for your dad...
No, Angels and Demons was Hans Zimmer.
Next time you're playing a song for your dad, just don't tell him that you're... Just don't tell him that it's from an anime and he'll love it.
I do that. Yeah. I do that a lot. Like, I play Guns N' Roses for my dad, and he... Granted, my parents are fairly open-minded, but there's still a little bit of, like, the older generation where they're like...
Yep.
Anime? Eh. But,
Japanimation? What is this Japanimation?
Oh, they're not like that. But,
My dad's still waiting for me to grow up.
So my dad's parents. Like,
why are they flying around? I don't get it. Why is there energy coming out of their arms?
My mom's more of the camp of, it's so violent and corrupt small children.
Yeah, my mom's like, Raditz is so sexy. He's got that long nail and hair.
I love your mom.
I've had an argument with Mitsugi's mom about if Vegeta or Raditz was hotter.
That is the best argument ever.
To which we ended up deciding that we could agree to disagree because she was more into long-haired men than I. That is literally how that argument ended.
There's going to be a thread about my mom on the forum by the time this episode gets out.
Oh, probably. There should be. By the way, I like the stereo.
Can we make a
I think we should.
We should invite your mom on the podcast.
Can we? Can she love it?
Come on, that'd be awesome.
But anyway.
She would be so confused.
Probably.
So, do we have any closing comments?
Based off of that, really quick... I played the guitar solo from Nightmare, the opening song from Death Note, to my dad, and he thought it was, like, some serious, like, awesome guitar, like, that it had absolutely nothing to do with anything Japanese, and then they started singing in Japanese, and he's like, you tricked me.
And here's a way.
Guitar solo. Guitar.
Oh, the...
Down the Reyes.
Yeah.
And here's a way to make it come back full circle. It can be a way to get people into anime, which is what we talked about last week. Full circle, bitches, this topic.
Nice!
I'm confused. I wonder why that is.
Yeah, so,
Yeah, listen to the anime, listen to the music, spend time to actually listen to it without watching the anime, because you might think you like it, and you might discover you don't, or vice versa.
And, but also, if you're even, like, if you don't feel like listening to the music right, you know, on its own, if you're, like, too lazy, which a lot of times that can be the case, just stop for a second and recognize that there is music going on in the background.
Yes,
and stop awesome. And listen to how it contributes to the scene, because you'll be surprised how much more epic the scene is just because the music makes it epic. Unless it's Sekire.
Anyway, you guys, so we're gonna dip out into a quick anime news break, and when we come back, we've got reviews on Moto to Loveru and Togainu no Chi, which I know nothing about.
Oh, you will.
I will. Stay tuned.
Hi everyone, this is Chiaki, and this is your first anime news break. First up, we have some website news, and no, for once, not the AAA website, as you all know, I am the webmistress. But as a webmistress, this particular news gets me pretty excited. Morning Manga Seinen Magazine, which is run by Kodansha, a very large publisher of manga in Japan, has recently announced that the web team is planning on opening an English version of their site in the near future. It's part of a revamp of the entire site, and the English version will be the first step in Kodansha's plans to make the site more available in multiple languages, starting with English, so that way they can have simultaneous releases worldwide. So if you're a big manga fan, I recommend keeping an eye on Kodansha's website, because they're normally one of the first people to publish new manga. In some Japanese political news, there's been some progress made on the Youth Ordinance Bill. For anyone who isn't familiar with what the Youth Ordinance Bill is, it's Bill number 156 in Japan. It would require the industry to self-regulate the sale and renting of, quote-unquote, manga, anime, and other images, except for real-life photography that, quote-unquote, unjustifiably glorify or exaggerate certain sexual or pseudo-sexual acts. The target of the bill is specifically the depictions of pseudo-sexual acts that would be engaged illegal in real life, which includes sexual acts between close relatives whose marriage would be illegal and therefore detrimental toward the healthy development of youth. Another section of the bill that's also keenly important is that it would allow the government to directly restrict the sale and renting of the included images and depicted acts that are also considered to be excessively disrupting of social order, such as rape. Well, this bill has been in the works a long time and has faced a number of oppositions, and most recently, the Japan Pen Club, which is a club for writers, and the Tokyo Bar Association announced that they were opposed to the new attempt of the bill. In addition, the Assembly's Democratic Party of Japan, or the DPJ, is meeting with manga creators to discuss the matter. The Pen Club of Japan argues that the bill warps the freedoms of speech and expression, as well as gives the government authority to enter areas into people's privacy. The bill is still up in the air, and I have a feeling that it's going to take a while, especially with strong opposition, but it'll be interesting to see what ultimately ends up happening with the bill, and if it's passed. Well, this was Chiaki, and this was your first Anime News Break. Back to the show!
Hello, this is Bakuyasu.
Hey, this is Elvin Blade Rogue.
Hey, everybody, this is Mikhail from the RRFDP podcast, and Ro-Ro Fight the Power. We're here to tell you about a podcast we have started. It is where us, your hosts, and most likely Saber, will be here, and we will talk about your news or whatever we deem we wish to talk about, from the everyday to the obscure. So check us out at rrfdppodcast.blogspot.com, and this is how we fight the power.
Fight the power!
I'll admit, though, the girl, Jessie, she was pretty damn hot. Everyone wanted to get into her pants back then.
If you say so, buddy.
That anime, it should be buried and it should never come out again. Yeah, I swear to God, this anime is pure sh.
And people were looking at me, and one girl actually came up to me and said, "What's a bankai?" I was very, very tempted to say my penis.
Hey there, this is Vic Mignogna from Full Metal Alchemist, Edward Elric. And just like these crazy hosts of the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast, I am a total anime addict!
Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed our news break. I enjoy our news breaks. If you don't enjoy our news break, you can tell us on the forum or shut up.
You tell them, mama.
No, seriously though. If you don't like anything about our show is all on you. You can change whatever you want. You have the power.
Except for us. You can't change us.
Yeah, we're not going anywhere.
But who would want to?
I don't know.
So, now we have impressions. And I think Mitsugi should go first. Because his nips are sizzling right now.
My nips are sizzling steaks.
You need to chill them nips.
Someone get the A1 sauce. So I'm doing an impression on my fifth and final horrible anime of the season.
Called At least you're done.
I gotta watch them all, though.
Yeah.
Called Moto to Love Ru.
Toe in the water.
Which is an anime that is so bad that during the course of my watching Kashimashi, which is not much better. Sorry, Rekka. I actually forgot most of what this anime was about. Good thing there was a reason for that. It's not about much of anything.
Yeah. Isn't it good when you realize you've watched six hours of nothing?
This anime is about I guess this is the second season, you know. I didn't watch the first one for a good reason, I guess. But, apparently this one is a year after Lala came to Earth. She's determined to make this guy named Rito fall in love with her. And that's because she was being forced to marry somebody on her home planet of Devil Luke. And I guess that's supposed to be clever because she has, like, a devil tail.
Oh. Honey.
That's about all this anime is about. That's about it.
You said Devil Luke, and I was like, Devil Fruit? What?
Devil Fruit? Gungam?
So, let's go through the pictures here on this website. Ready? So, let's see. What do we have here? We have a kid sitting, kneeling naked in front of lockers.
What? Excuse me? I thought he was... Oh.
Nope. Nope. Up, a kid naked in a bathhouse.
Mata?
With a duck on his head.
With a duck on his head.
Yep.
That's how they do it in Japan. I've been there.
Oh, wait. There's more. Naked girl with the light shining to the side because that's how they
shining
censor them.
Beam of
I swear
light.
To God, this anime, they beat, like, the naked girl joke to death. They'll have the scene where, like, this he'll be running up to her and he'll trip and fall and grab her, like, her towel and pull it off. And then he'll look up at her and they'll have, like, this, like, triangular light shining through the screen so you can't see her private areas. It's very clever, I know. It's funny, like, once, and then that's it. Oh, here's another shot.
Whoa.
The girl from the other planet, who's, I guess, an assassin,
that
blonde
looks
chick.
Like Black Cat.
Her hair, she can, like, control her hair like a weapon.
It's Black Cat.
So she punches him, Love Hina style, all the time. Pretty typical.
That's Black Cat.
Her
you
hair
can do
looks
that with
like
her
a
hair,
fist.
And she looks like
it is a
Eve.
Fist. That she
her,
control
her hair is a fist.
Seriously, they
yeah.
stole that from Black Cat.
She made her hair into
what
a fist
heck?
And punched him with it. Next picture. Are we going to get a picture yet that's not ridiculous? Oh, a girl measuring
what?
This chick's thigh to see if her skirt was too long.
Oh, yeah, it's the magical
that looks like
area thing.
Well, it's like dress code in school.
Yeah.
If your skirt's too long, too short, you're in trouble or whatever. And moving right along.
Yeah, they totally follow that in every anime ever.
You're not going to get a normal photo here, but from this show. Up, girl in a wet t-shirt got caught in the rain. Wow. Mm.
Delicious.
And the final one is... Oh, it's a panty shot looking straight up a girl's panties. Yep.
Oh, but guess what? It's censored.
It's censored. Big black mark. Yep.
That is a really obnoxious black mark.
I want to make an anime shot all at night and have the beams of light censoring and have everyone in the anime just be like, what the hell? What the hell?
Where's
is
that light coming from?
I really have to just talk about this anime in terms of scenes I remember because it has no plot line at all to speak of. I'm not just saying that because I can't like remember every little detail of it. So, we have a bathhouse episode where two people from the last season are like, trying to attack somebody, and they're hiding in a trash can, and they have a remote-controlled, person. They have, like, a person by on remote.
Okay.
And there's, like, a battle in the bathhouse, and it's very not interesting, because it doesn't, it contributes nothing to any story whatsoever. Then there's the scene where the kid gets caught with the girl underneath of the playground jungle gym thing in the rain, and all you can do is stare at a wet t-shirt, and you guys just saw a picture of that.
Mm-hmm.
The vice principal is a pedophile. He lies down on his back at the base of staircases and watches the girls' panties as they go up.
Oh, that's really disgusting.
And he's like a fat guy, old dude, and these are like really, really, they're not, this isn't like, you know, 17-year-old high school girls. We're talking like 12-year-olds, and he like frolics around
sick.
And hunts them down outside. It is sick.
That's really gross, dude.
Lala spends half this anime naked, and you saw a photo of that also.
Many.
This anime is horrible. I went through like 9 pictures, and not one of them had something that would make you think this was a serious show.
No.
Right?
Yeah, that's pretty...
Naked kid in front of lockers. I mean, it's like, honestly.
Oh, look, he's naked.
This show is just full of slapstick anime comedy that... If you've seen more than, like, 3 slapstick shows, you stop laughing at stuff like pulling the towel off the girl, or slipping and landing on top of her and grabbing her boob.
Sekirei.
Sekirei.
Is that still funny? Do you guys find that funny?
I found it funny in Sekirei.
Oh, that's because Joel McDonald was voicing the main character.
That's not nice. That's not okay.
I mean, if you guys think that, like, falling down on the girl again and grabbing her boob is funny, then I think you should watch this. Because that's all this show has to offer. But there's, like, other shows. If you don't want to watch a serious show, there's other shows that are better, that are silly. Azumanga Daioh is better. Excel Saga is better. Throw out some funny shows. Come on.
Honey and Clover.
Honey and Clover is better.
Mitsudomoe.
School Rumble is better.
Oh,
we just talked about that.
Rumble.
Mitsudomoe is better.
Big Windup.
Big Windup's not really a comedy, but...
It has
comedic moments.
It does, but it's sports.
Oh my god, I forgot to masturbate this morning.
Yeah, and the kid in this anime spent... Spends the anime mostly naked too, and here's another good scene. Ready? This scene completely encompasses this anime's like essence. Ready?
No.
Lala is this alien girl from Devil Week, and she makes all kinds of random inventions like right on the spot that they basically use as a device for comedy.
Mm.
So Rito is taking a bath in his house, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Lala, I think she either does it or someone steals the device from her, but they push the button and it makes the bathtub, like, expand, like, to be, like, massive. Mm-hmm. Like, Olympic swimming pool type steaming hot bathtub. And he's like, oh my god, this is so cool. And he's, like, swimming laps in it. And then the girls come in to the bathroom because they don't know he's in there. And they all come in, and I guess they're all gonna, like, you know, just take a bath together or something weird.
That's what happens.
And they get in the bath, and he's, like, basically under the water holding his breath because it's massive, and they can't see him. And I guess they never thought to question why their bath in their house or whatever was massive. But he's in there hiding under the water, and then someone pushes the button again after the girls get in, and it shrinks back to normal, and they all end up piled on top of each other in the bathtub.
Oh.
I don't know, like, that is that if that's funny. If that sounded funny, this is amazing for you. You're gonna tickle yourself pink every minute, but I just, you know, I mean, this is like the 40th anime like this one, and I just don't get any pleasure out of it anymore. But I'm gonna finish it. I only recommend it if the things I've said sound funny. If they sound trite and overused, for God's sake, unless you're trying to torture somebody to get answers out of them, keep it on the shelf and in your pants. So, this was like hate spew. The whole... all five of my animes were hate spew. Psychic Detective Yakumo, didn't like it.
Really?
No, that one's...
See, we looked
that
out.
That one's so dry. It's so boring. Star Driver is the most formulaic anime I've seen in years. The Fortune Ontario is the best one, and it's about teen high school vampires that don't bite each... That don't
and
bite
he
people.
Hates vampires.
Wow,
it's
not that's the best one?
It's not good. It's just better.
Yeah.
And then Otome Yokai Zakudo is not that good either. And now this one.
So hot. Okay.
We've both had at least one good one.
Well, I mean,
Bakuman
yeah.
for me.
I'm harder to please, I think, nowadays.
Probably. I don't doubt it. I mean, all of the good shit was 10 years ago. You know.
Yeah. But the Berserk sequel's coming out. I'm going to jump all over that. So Otake's got Togainu no Chi, subtitled as Bloody Curs, which don't get it, don't understand. It sounds like pirate talk.
Bloody Curs!
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
Now that I've hated on anime, maybe you can make things better.
I can hopefully make things better for the yaoi fangirls.
Oh, that's me.
We need to have a sound effect for yaoi. Just, like, something I can insert there.
It's like,
just,
fangirl squeals?
It should just be me.
Y-O-I!
Yowie!
Yowie!
It should just be me going, hee. That
no,
should be our sound.
This should be the sound effect. It's the yowie paddle.
No, stand up. Stand
well,
up.
Might as well have
stand up.
Why am I standing
stand
up?
Stand up.
Okay.
That's the sound.
You might as well have some yaoi, because I'm going to have Yuri in just a few minutes.
Really?
Oh.
I have some Yuri.
Wait, what? My ears just went...
I have met some bits of Yuri.
What series? Okay, maybe I'll just test it later. Anyway, I'll just wait till later. So, Togainu no Chi is pretty awesome.
It is.
I like it a lot. That's just me getting my bias out there. I'm just vomiting my bias. It's pretty. There are pretty boys.
It's a boys'
are
love
you
anime.
To say something.
What?
Are it's, you a no. man that likes men?
Do I look like a man? Don't answer that. Just because I do crossplay well, also I crossplay Shanks now.
Quite well, actually.
You do look like a man trapped in a sexy ass woman's body.
Let's make love, Chiaki.
I'll supply the score.
And how?
Mitsuki leaves the room and the girls digress.
The girls just make love.
So, Togainu no Chi.
Yes.
Bloody Curs.
Man love.
Man love.
Guy love, that's all it is. God. Nobody watches Scrubs.
There's nothing gay about it.
No, but I'm watching House
Rise.
Lupus.
Oh. Well, what do you know? It is.
This time, it's lupus.
I love House.
I love House,
too. I do, too. We were talking about Scrubs. Why? We were talking about
I
gay love.
I just started watching House, and I love it.
Good.
You just
I'm
started?
Glad. Yeah, I just started.
I got
wow.
into it.
Oh,
good,
wow, you were behind,
all,
good sir.
All the meets he watches on TV is football.
Speaking of behinds,
Boys love.
Boys love.
Togainu no Chi. Way to bring it back to the focus. Right,
yeah. You mentioned behinds.
Plot then, summary. Plot summary.
Okay. Plot summary. So, it involves a game. Basically. So there was, like, there was a war, and was it, is it supposed to be Japan?
Yep.
Is it supposed to be Japan?
Yep, it's
okay,
Japan.
It's Japan. Okay. So basically there's a war, there's this war in Japan, and, like, it ends, and there's a city called Toshima, and it basically falls into complete decay and ruins.
Mm.
And it's pretty much Skid Row.
Yeah.
But, it's been taken over by this crime syndicate called I cannot pronounce that because it's not Japanese. It's like,
Visio.
I read the subtitles, I don't listen.
Visio. It's called Visio.
It's Visio. Okay. So, it's basically, there's this game, and it's called Igura, and it's run by the crime syndicate, and the head of the crime syndicate, which is Il Rey, and, basically, the point of this game is to collect, like, they're like dog tags.
They are dog tags.
From other players, which, you know, by any means that you can, killing, you
Battle
know,
Royale.
Stuff like
Giant
that.
Giant massacre.
Oh my
yes.
god, Battle Royale for, like, despite being horribly, unnecessarily violent, it was really engrossing.
Really?
No, I loved Battle Royale.
I never
the
saw it.
The manga is actually really exciting.
The manga was what I read. It was good.
So
the novel apparently is really good too, though.
It's also one of the most horrible things I've ever read in my life. I wouldn't even be caught having people glance at the pages of that manga while I was reading it.
The guy who played Light in Death Note played one of the main characters in the live action Battle Royale.
I've seen that
Swale?
Movie.
Really?
No, Light in Death Note, like the live action Death Note.
Oh, the lie. I thought Note, I was like you said Death Note and
no,
who played, and I was like, yeah. That always happens when I review or do impressions of stuff, like. Things happen.
Anyway.
Vortexes, they open. So anyway, the main dude in this place, he's really pretty.
Akira.
His name is Akira. And he was framed, basically, for a crime. And he was sentenced to life in jail, pretty much.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Unless.
And this is
blood sex?
Well, no.
Oh, wait,
we
that's
get
what
there.
Happens in the jail.
Actually, surprisingly, the jail was kind of boring.
Oh.
Yeah, we weren't there for very long.
No butt sex.
Oh.
It was kind of disappointing. I was hoping
I
for pretty butt sex.
I guess he didn't drop the soap.
Nope. He wasn't there long enough to drop
him
the
soap.
What kind of a jail is that?
They didn't give him any soap to drop. I mean, like, there's really no point.
Nope, they just told him to go to Igra instead.
Yes. That's basically how it goes. His point, he made a deal... Got his pardon, went to Igura, and he's been kicking ass ever since.
Yes. With his friends, and a dude who I thought was his gay lover. And I was apparently wrong, because he made a comment in the middle of the second episode, being all like, wait, I don't understand. Gay? It was interesting.
So, aren't you a guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, correct. So I was pleasantly surprised by this series.
Mm.
I didn't actually know it was a boys' love series until that... One comment that Akira makes, like...
Oh, in the first episode?
10 minutes in, like, to the first episode.
You got a nice ass?
No, it was, like, he was just... It was like...
Pants on so I can squeeze it?
No, the police officers were getting ready to take him away, and the one I thought was his gay lover was waiting outside his door because he never, like, showed up that night when they'd had plans. And the police officers were like... Oh, well, if you're going to say your goodbyes, you can say them here. And he makes a comment like, well, what if I want to do something
that I
can't
do
out here?
And they were like, okay, take 10 minutes. So he, like, throws his arm around his friend.
Yes,
and, like,
officer, please do be rough with me.
No.
Those guys were creepy.
They were creepy. But his friend, Keisuke.
Mm-hmm.
Keisuke was cute.
So was Rin. I'm not really spoiling anything by saying this, but there's a really sick moment in the second episode.
Oh!
Where you meet a couple more characters. There are some pretty insane characters
and
in this series, like deranged, disgusting.
Not to mention, can I say it?
Do you want to talk about him?
The pet?
The pet, yes.
Okay.
The bondage pet.
Apparently, so the main guy, or not like the main guy of the syndicate, like Hatake was saying earlier, but there's another guy who's like, sort of he's like an observer to all of the fighting that's going on, and he has what's known as this pet. And Hatsuki and I have deemed him the bondage pet because basically it is a human who has had their vocal cords and their eyes ripped out. They're wearing a blindfold and they now only have their really strong sense of smell. They wear all leather and they crawl around on all fours.
You say they, but it's a he.
He.
Sounds like something out of Speedgrapher.
It's pretty bad.
Honestly, it's worse than Speedgrapher.
It made me literally uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah, we were kind of sitting there squirming. It was gross.
Really, like, it's just...
It sounds kind of deranged.
It is deranged.
It's deranged, but...
And it's bloody.
Like it. it's bloody.
But it's fake blood.
It's bloody, but it's, yeah, it's not like... It's not like High School of the Dead
it's
blood.
Animated.
No.
It's like really red blood.
Yes, Mitsuki, it's animated.
Good job. But no, but High School of the Dead had like really convincing blood.
And that's why lots of boobs.
Oh, it was delicious.
there were so many boobs.
So this is like the anti.
Psycho.
This is like the anti High School of the Dead.
Yeah, there's actually no fan service in this.
None. They don't even have shirtless guys. But which it's you would think boys love anime, there'd be shirtless guys. There, well, there is one, but he wears like a vest.
Psycho.
Or there's like an anime you guys would love called Mirage of Blaze.
Okay.
Is it
a boys love anime?
More like man love.
Oh, yes.
Ooh. Yummy.
Are they scruffy men?
Shirtless man.
Are they scruffy men?
They're like the re-embodiment of like the old Ieyasu Tokugawa and stuff in like modern day, but there's lots of man love with bare
chests. I like the man
love. We're watching this.
So
right now.
So would you recommend this to people?
I would recommend this to people who
aren't guys.
Well, you know, honestly,
it's pretty badass.
If you can ignore the subtle like tones of, I'm sure it's going to get worse. I mean, there's only like five episodes out right now.
If you can ignore the bondage pit,
there's a lot of like, yeah, that's really weird. But it's, I mean, if you can handle that kind of stuff and if you like badass fighting, I would recommend it. It's pretty cool. I mean, it doesn't have the tone of a boys' love thing. At all, actually. I was really surprised.
Very, very rarely.
To find out that
it's
this
like
was BO.
Entendre over physical.
It might get physical later. We don't know yet.
Gonna get
only five
physical.
Episodes.
Physical.
And the characters are really cool. Physical. And there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
They're not shallow, which is nice.
They're very three dimensional characters.
Unfortunately, not three dimensional enough.
Cool.
All right. Yeah. So I'm glad that you guys liked the butt intercourse.
Which hasn't happened yet, but I'm sure we will.
The implied.
Implied butt intercourse.
Intercourse.
Buttocks intercourse.
I'm being very formal with it tonight.
Why does that sound grosser than buttocks?
Buttocks
intercourse.
Because like, scientific terms always sound gross.
They really do. Anyway, so we're going to take another news break. Yes. Another one. We're gonna do it. We're gonna roll with it.
Oh. Do it,
right
Chiaki.
Oh.
Do it.
Oh.
Three, two,
baby,
one.
Oh.
This is Chiaki, and this is your second anime news break. First up, Taiyo Matsumo, who is the creator of Tekken Crete, which is an anime that was requested to the addicts a while ago, is making a new manga. He's going to launch a new manga series called Sunny in the February issue of Shokukan's monthly Iki magazine, which will be released on December 25th. The January issue published a preview image which features three boys. One of the boys is wearing a cap from the Yokohama Whales, which is the former name of the Yokohama Bay Stars baseball team from 1978 to 1972. Another boy is wearing a belt which appears to be from a transforming hero, such as those in Kamen Rider and other live-action tokusatsu, which are the special effects series. So it looks like it's going to be an anime set somewhat in the past, maybe have a retro feel. It definitely looks like the same style of the artist of Tekken Crete. So if you're a fan of this guy and his work, I highly recommend keeping an eye on Shogakukan's monthly Iki magazine. Next up, don't tell Mitsugi, but we have some 3D news. Ghost in the Shell, SAC, or Solid State Society, which is a film in the Ghost in the Shell series, is being released in 3D. Kamiyama himself is going to be overseeing the conversion, and IG is going to have a newly animated opening sequence. It's going to open in Tokyo's Shinjuku Walled 9 Theater and other Japanese theaters March of next year. So, if you have a 3D TV and are looking for some 3D anime, this is a possibility for you. In other anime 3D news, I guess we might have been wrong about that whole anime not going 3D screen. The One Piece Toriko 3D film trailer has been streamed. It was streamed on the official YouTube channel for the musical group Tokyo Sa Paradise Orchestra, and it is an 80-second trailer for the Jump Heroes film. A stereoscopic 3D double billing of One Piece 3D, Muigawara Chase, and Tokoro 3D, Karinaku Gourmet Adventure. Toei Animation is producing the two films, and they are going to open in Japan on March 19th, 2011. So, even more 3D anime to come in 2011. Stay tuned. There's more to the show. This was Chiaki, and that was your second anime news break.
Summer of 2008, a man named Fightbait started an anime podcast.
I watched Grenadier because of the tits.
And it was terrible. 2 years later...
Maybe his penis is the duck.
I don't know how you would put that in a woman.
Fightbait.com may still suck ass, but we're bringing you more content than ever. If you head over to the website, you can now find news, reviews, editorials, pictures of dogs, and more crappy podcasts than your ears can handle. You even have the option to subscribe to the podcast, the blog, or both. Fightbait.com, kicking ass on the internet for 2 years and counting, proving that quantity is better than quality.
Hi, my name is Sonny Strait, voice of Krillin from Dragon Ball Z, and I'm an anime addict.
Kamehameha, bitches!
From our last news break, we only have one more segment to go, and that is our review segment. Mitsugi, we both have requested reviews, Mitsugi and I, and he's doing Kashimashi, and I'm doing Bakemonogatari. So...
Rekka was getting up all my grill, because he requested this anime like 5 months ago, and I hadn't
Welcome
watched
to the Anime
it.
Addicts Anonymous podcast, where our slogan for your review requests is, we'll get to it. Eventually.
Yeah, so
it's true. People forget that I'm watching 7 animes for the reviews, but like, you know, I kept saying, Rekka, you know, I'll get to this one when I'm caught up with all my ones I'm supposed to be watching, and I realized that, well, that probably wasn't going to happen. So I just decided to watch Kashimashi just for Rekka and do it, get it out of the way, and now I'm like 25 episodes behind on the rest of the stuff. So, Kashimashi is a show that only has 3 real characters. Hazumu, who's a girl and a guy at the same time.
Dude, I love those.
Yasuna, who's a girl. And Tomari, who's a girl. So, the show is about this boy named Hazumu, who, in the first episode, he confesses that he loves this other girl. And I don't know how these people know what love is, because they're like 9. But he loves Yasuna. And Yasuna rejects him.
Oh, see, even Neil is upset about that.
There's a reason for this, and I'll mention that later, but basically, Hazumu gets his panties all up in a twist, which he will soon, and he goes into the forest to whine like a little wuss, and a alien spaceship lands on top of him and kills him.
Oh.
Literally.
Well, then.
After which, the alien spaceship people bring him back to life as a woman, as a girl.
Oh, boy.
Same age.
Oh,
which is perfect because Yasuna likes girls.
Oh, snap.
Perfect!
Yeah. So, and skipping around a little bit, interestingly enough, Tomari, who was Hazumu's, like, one of his good friends when he was a guy, also likes girls, and she's a girl too. So, it's a girl love triangle.
Sweet.
And they all love each other.
But they're like 9.
Yeah, they're like 9, but 12.
Do they look 9?
Really gross.
Yes, they do. They really do.
Oh, like, man. Yeah, they do.
Oh, they look 9.
Yeah, they look 9.
And, oh, boy.
So, this anime has been around
for a while.
I just want to
say, I didn't start questioning my sexuality until, like, 13. What the hell is up with these chicks?
They just know.
20.
Anyway, so moving on from that.
21. Oh dear crap.
The show, some aliens show up at Hazumu's house and they want to kind of take notes and study the humans. Yasuna has this disease where she can't see guys. It's kind of weird, right?
What?
And let me explain this. She can see girls, but guys show up and her vision is like grayed out, blurry images.
How does that even happen?
I don't know. It's a bunch of BS. And it's actually a plot device that lets them cop out at the end of the show. This whole show is basically a big plot device that collapses upon itself at the end, and an ending that's really bad. Oh, if it doesn't sound bad already, the
Rick
whole
is like ready to claw your eyes out.
Well, 10 episodes of the show are just three girls fighting over each other, and they're not even like, you know, like they can't make up their wishy washy. That's what they're like in the show, basically.
Please never make that noise again.
Well, halfway through the show. Yasuna kind of gets a little scorned by Hazumu, and suddenly she can't see girls either. So she's pretty much
Blind.
She can see everything. She can see normal things. But she can't even see, like, guys or girls in photos, and so it's a dramatic moment. She's, like, trying to draw Hazumu's face, and she can't remember what he looks like in her mind, because it's blurred. And so she's trying to draw it, sketch it out, but she can't. She's crying on the paper or whatever.
That's weird.
And you find out that the people from the alien planet have the same problem, but everybody has it. So, like, no one knows anybody else. It's kind of strange. No one has any friends or anything because they can't see each other, really.
Mm.
And at the end of the show, Tomari steps down to kind of just be a friend. And Hazumu and Yasuna kind of hook up. And because Hazumu finally confesses his love, then the disease is broken, and she can suddenly see everything again. Oh. And that's the cop out of the show, basically. Boy, and
that only works in Fruits Basket.
Touching.
Yeah.
For everything else.
The only thing that confused me about this show is that there's actually a guy in the show, and his name is, what's his name? He's very unimportant. Asuta, I think. He actually loves Hazumu also. So everyone loves Hazumu, but he's a guy, so it'd be normal. But, of course, he can only be just a friend to her.
Because it would be normal.
Because it would be too normal, you know, to have a guy and a girl relationship.
Of course.
One thing I will say is that they actually do some kissing and stuff. There's actually, like, maybe six kisses through the whole show. It isn't like they're being that annoying thing where they can't get things moving.
I feel dirty.
What else do I say about the show? Eventually, the aliens leave and they go back.
What do the aliens look like?
One of them's like this pink-haired girl who floats around, and she's pretty hot.
Oh.
She's older, significantly older.
Does she look 9?
She looks more 16, 17, 18, 19, something like that.
It's acceptable
anime.
In Japan.
But she kind of floats around and gives Hazumu lots of hugs and kisses and things. She's like a flirty, weird thing. The guy wears, like, a full spandex bodysuit and has, like, a little, like, antenna thing that looks like one of the plant sprouts from, Pikmin sticking on top of his head.
Oh, cute!
And it's really embarrassing.
Oh, I would like that.
And he ends up a teacher at their school. Typical.
He's of a course. Teacher?
No, he isn't. He's an alien. Scientist type guy. But he becomes a teacher at the school.
I called dibs.
Have him.
I don't know what else to say. Like, I don't know. It wasn't really my cup of tea. It was a Yuri love triangle where they didn't do much else at all.
Didn't look really nicely animated either. Like, from what I saw glancing over your shoulder.
It's not, like, terribly animated, but some of the character faces are inconsistent. They kind of do that, like, weird, inconsistent face, like, kind of like a cross between chibi and non-chibi. Like, Azumanga does it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But they don't do it as well.
Yeah.
And Faith Hill's hot, by the way.
Okay.
And,
that's not Faith Hill.
No, it is.
That is a man.
It will be in a second. Wait for it. Wait for it. Oh! That's Faith Hill.
With dramatic windblown.
Yeah.
And a very short dress.
Yeah, she's hot. Anyway,
fashion tape.
And,
so what would you give this?
The music's kind of... I can't remember anything about the music, except that the intro and outros were really annoying. I don't know. I feel bad for Rekka. You know, like, I know Rekka loves the show, and I don't want to be mean, but, like...
Well, it goes back to everyone has shows that they love that they know suck. For me, that's Orphan. It sucks balls. Yes. I love it.
Out of Yu-Gi-Oh!
Out of the 4 hours that the show covered in its span, I think I enjoyed like 20 minutes of that 4 hours.
So, candidate.
I would probably give it 2.5. You know, really weird alien people that look like pedophiles out of 5. Because, I mean, it didn't really, wasn't really my cup of tea. If it was Yuri, make it Yuri. You know, make him, like, older so I can enjoy it. You know, the lesbianism. But,
thanks for clarifying.
Nothing's less appealing to a dude than, like, no, dude, than like, 10-year-old, than 10-year-old lesbians.
Yeah. No, the other L word.
Lesbians?
But still, 2.5, that's in the middle.
Yeah.
I didn't bury it.
Yeah.
I could have.
I'm surprised. You sounded like you were going to bury it.
All right, so.
Just saying.
Yeah, please, Chucky, please lead us into something a little more positive.
My anime was Bakemonogatari, which an alternative title is Ghost Story, because the title actually is like a play on words between like monster and ghost and things like that. And it was requested by Grim Reaper Hay and Under the Air. And I think someone might have requested it like a long ass time ago, and I forgot who. So if you requested this show, you're that other person. It's based off of a light novel that was written by Nisio Ishin, which was illustrated by Vorfin and published by Kodansha back in 2006. And it was only a 2-volume light novel, but it was like really witty and fast-paced, so I am told. I didn't actually read it. I apologize. But the anime is more recent. The anime was done back in 2009 by Akiyuki Shimbo, and the studio was Shaft. So, it was done in 2009, it's a 15-episode series, and I wasn't sure how they were going to keep it going for 15 episodes, but I was actually really impressed with it. So the story. There's a lot of things that I'm going to say that seem like spoilers, but this is definitely one of those anime that give you just enough that it's not plotless or storyless, but at the same time let you interpret a lot of what's going on and the meanings behind a lot of things. There's like a lot of symbolism and a lot of dialogue. So the anime follows the story of Koyomi Aragaki. Araragi. I have a hard time saying his name. Araragi. And everyone calls him Araragi-kun because he's basically their junior, even though he's their senior for a lot of it. But it follows his story, and he was recently a vampire.
Hmm.
And you kind of find out the story. I'm not going to explain what recently a vampire means completely, because you find that out literally at the very end of the series. But he was recently a vampire. He's kind of a human. He's only really, like, halfway a human, is where the way that he's portrayed.
He's like Gilgamesh.
Yeah, he's
Gilgamesh.
Like, he's not really human, but he's human enough. And he's walking through school one day, and it's like this long, almost Utena-esque, epic spiral staircase that you wouldn't find in any school, but of course works for the symbolism. And there's this girl falling down the center of the staircase, and he instinctually reaches out to catch her. And luckily he does, and not because he's this, like, feat of superhuman vampire strength, but it's because she literally weighs nothing. Like, so the girl's supposed to weigh, like, 45 kilograms or whatever, and she weighs 4. So she literally weighs nothing. And that is Senjo Gahara. And Senjo Gahara threatens, goes to Araragi. I cannot say his name, I'm sorry. Araragi, and says, you know my secret. If you tell anyone, I'm going to kill you, basically. And she does that while having an X-Acto knife on one side of his mouth and a stapler on the other. And she fights with, like, well, fights, quote-unquote, with, like, office supplies. But
that's when I stopped watching.
Yeah, that's when I stopped watching, too.
See, I was about to say, if this either one turns you off, or oppositely, one turns you on, ignore it, because it goes away and never comes back. It's very irrelevant for basically most of the series. It's just the way that she kind of pushes people away.
Well, if that won't turn you off, the annoying girl's voice will. And the horribly repetitive music. Sorry, it's your review.
Araragi is, each character has a strength that's also at the same time their weakness. And Adaragi's strength and weakness is the fact that he has to save everyone. And I know that sounds like a cliche, but they actually take it to the point where it is almost like a mental issue where he'll save a girl that's being, like, hunted or raped or something, but at the same time, he'd also go and save the man who was hunting or raping her. So it's like, it's not like he does it out of, like, moral conscience. It's just, like, almost like a character flaw.
It's like
he
OCD.
He has to save people and he has to be involved. So, of course, the more that Senjo Gahara tries to push him away, the more that he tries to help her. And he ends up helping her by taking him to this man called Meme Oshino. And Oshino is, like, this old man in this abandoned, derelict cram school that has, they don't really explain a backstory and you don't really need one, because he's kind of like the random wise person that exists to give information. And you find out that Senjo Gahara was afflicted by a weight crab. And this whole anime is about, like, various lores and, like, mythos, things that are real and not real, and I can't tell the difference half the time, but it's all about, you know, ghosts and specters and myths, like, are you guys familiar with, like, the old monkey paw myth?
Yeah.
That comes, it makes a cameo. It's basically, it's a monkey, the myth is that it's a monkey paw, like a mummified monkey paw. I forgot what story it first showed up in, but you wish on it and it will grant you wishes, but it's, of course, you know, that age old, you never know how it's going to make the wish come true. So you could, like, wish to be the smartest person in your class, and it makes you the smartest person by, like, having the other people who are smarter than you get hit in the head and, like, have horrible brain damage for the rest of your life, their life. So it's like, it makes your wish come true, but not in ways that you would want. That you would want to make happen. So, Oshino is basically the wise sage tutor person, and he has a small vampire living with him called Shinobu.
She's small?
Yeah.
Like, is it a girl? Like, she's, like, is she, like, a tiny vampire?
She's, like, a kid.
Okay, so we're not talking, like, May, Handmaid May.
No. We're talking, like, a child.
I had to check. This is anime.
I know. Yeah. And he has a vampire living with him. And then this is where the series really goes into arcs. And Senjo Gahara is the first arc where he basically cures her affliction of this weight crab taking her weight. And the next arc follows the annoying girl.
Girls should love that, though, right? Having their weight taken?
Like, you don't...
What?
Well, the thing is she didn't look skinnier. She was just weightless.
Oh,
so she could have looked like a 500-pound man, but still weighed nothing on scale.
One hell of a long-distance runner.
Yeah. Well, actually, she's the star of the track team.
There we go.
But, I called that one.
Oh, there it is. Sorry. But the next arc follows the story of a young girl who's Mayoi Hachikuji, and the next one, and the next one, and the next one, and there's five total arcs. And each arc has, like, it seems like its own story, but they're all tied together by Adaragi and Senjo Gahara's relationship. Because each arc has an aspect of their relationship built in, and an aspect of relationships, which is contact, confession, injury, jealousy, and infidelity. And each arc has an evolution in them, and has a story develop through that. And the downside is, of course, it is a harem, in the sense of it's one guy and all girls, minus Oshino.
Do they treat it like a harem, though?
They don't really treat it like a harem. Like, I looked up some stuff on this anime because I was really interested by it, and some people, like, say, oh, they all fall for him, but I really don't get that, because the one girl is definitely a lesbian. Like, she's like, I am a lesbian. Like, she says it.
Well, she's upfront about it.
So,
we have lots of lesbians and man-boy love happening tonight.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's like, they all definitely develop a strong bond with Araragi, but they don't necessarily fall in love with him, I wouldn't say. It does become a love triangle at the end, but not until the very end, and they don't treat it like a normal cliche, oh my god, it's a love triangle. There really isn't that many cliches. I mean, there's some, but, like, they're not too glaring. Senjo Gahara doesn't turn into, like, the stereotypical, I'm your girlfriend, so now that means I have to trip over my own 2 feet and be an idiot all the time. Like, she's a really strong character and stays that way throughout the whole series. And the supporting cast really exists in many ways to further Araragi's and Senju Gahara's relationship.
That's a tough name.
It really is. The downsides to this anime. One, it's really stylized. And I like really stylized anime, and I like this anime's look. They do that look where they don't do, like, line art, really. And I like that. But the problem is they take it too far. They start doing things like focusing on, like, characters' eyes and, like, focusing on random things and, like, the background that don't really have that much to do with it. And I'm sure if you really read into it, you can find some symbolism for it. But honestly, it just gets to the point that it's a little annoying and distracting. So despite the fact that it's really beautifully animated in a very symbolic way, in a way that fits the show, they take it too far.
So they just randomly get, like, obsessed with someone's eye and, or, like, their earlobe and just focus in on it real close?
It's basically like one camera shot will be, like, up on a person's eye. And then the next camera shot will be on, like, a ladder or something. And then the next camera shot will be on a shadow somewhere.
Are they trying to be, like, what's the word for it?
Artistic?
Like, it's an artistic term, but I can't put my finger on it.
I'm sure they're going...
Avant-garde or something like
that. I'm sure that's what they're going for, and it kind of fits the show. I just think they take it a little too far to the point that you're like, all right, the message is being lost by you trying to push too much symbolism. The other thing is that, like, they seem to rush the backstory and the important parts. Like, it's a very dialogue-heavy show, and at first I was bored with it until I really started listening, if that makes sense, and focusing on what was really happening. But because it's a really dialogue-heavy show, they spend all this time sometimes on random, quote-unquote, character-building crap, and then they rush through the plot. And there's one arc that's really bad with that, and that's the snake arc. And that just, it has weird fan service, and they rush through the plot, and they do stupid,
Well, this anime didn't really strike me as one that was going to have much fan service in it,
It really doesn't have that much fan service, despite the panty shot at the very beginning. But, that's, like, the only panty shot in the series. The snake arc is the only one that's kind of out of place. Aside from that, it has great wordplay, it has great kind of canter to the characters, and the characters, the dialogue is really wittily written and really sharply written, where they do things like, they almost narrate what they're doing, like, alright, I can tell that you're a very slow person. I'm not a very slow person. You are a very slow person, so I'm going to lay this out for you quite simply. Alright, then lay it out for me quite simply.
Is that like in, like, Inuyasha when they come, when they're talking to themselves, when they're fighting, like, you know, she'd be like, I have to use the Tetsaiga to cut through the demons, and then he does it.
No. It's not like that. It's more just like dialogue with a person.
You know what I'm talking about? They always, like, say what they're gonna do out loud, and they do it.
It's more like, it's not necessarily... It's more like they have their mental discussions out loud with the other person, in some cases. But it works for the show, and I don't know. I mean, the last thing I'm going to touch on, because Mitsugi mentioned it, is the music. The music sucks, but it's great. And what I mean by that is, if you were to listen to the score, it would probably be the worst score ever. But for the anime, they pair it perfectly. Like, the four chords that Mitsugi was talking about.
Oh my god, they weren't even chords. I was sitting over here doing work on my laptop. And they were just playing the same four notes over and over again. Repeatedly.
Oh my god,
I can't focus. It's driving me insane.
They do it during dialogues that's going, obviously, in circles. So it's like, it's kind of that annoying point where you realize you're talking to someone and you keep going back to the same points and you're stuck in a loop.
So they've made music symbolic to this too.
Exactly.
Can I ask a question here? What is the benefit or the purpose of having conversations that go in circles?
Because even though they go in circles, you end up finding out things about the characters.
It's like an interrogation.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Only like, subconscious.
That kind of reminds me of Katana Gatari. They have, like, endless conversations that are just boring.
They're not endless. I mean, they're not all the time either, but they happen. It's kind of like...
Well, they're endless in Katana Gatari.
It's like answering a question with a question, sometimes. Where you still sometimes will get an answer, but you still end up with a question.
Okay.
So, overall, I really liked the animation. I thought sometimes they pushed it too far. I thought some things in the story could have been revised or touched on and things like that. But overall, I'm going to give this... I'm going to give this four dying vampires out of five. Because...
Do a lot of vampires die in this show? There's a lot... You know what? I kept hearing people getting, like, their bones and flesh tearing and all kinds of... I didn't watch any of it, but I heard pretty much all of it.
Yeah, there is... There's some really violent moments. Like...
I just remember staplers.
Yeah.
Lots of them. And protractors. And protractors are damn sharp.
Yeah, they are. But, I mean, it's a good show, especially if you like symbolic shows, but if you are not a fan of shows with a lot of talking, if you're not a fan of shows with that are heavy in symbolism or have, like, I don't know, various animation styles, I would say I thought this anime was boring as hell up until I finished the first arc. And right about four episodes in, I started having that oh my god moment. They're not just sitting here talking about boring crap. There's actually a point to this. And then my hope for this anime was renewed and I really ended up liking it. So, four dying vampires out of five.
I am genuinely happy that you liked it.
Aw, thank you. And with that, our podcast has ended. We were efficient tonight.
What can I say? Well, well-oiled machine over here at the Animatics Anonymous podcast.
Oh, no. Oh, snap. I had some last-minute announcements.
Well, please.
Okay, first announcement that I've been forgetting that I shouldn't forget. Elven Blade Rogue, for anyone that knows or has an IMVU account, it's like an instant messenger
with
3D people. Elven Blade Rogue on our forums made Anime Addicts Anonymous t-shirts, so you can actually wear them in the game. And if you, or not game, but text messenger, if you get a shirt, please let us know. I don't know.
We'll make an announcement and say that you're awesome for getting a shirt.
Exactly.
If you want a shirt, go on our forum and PM
Elven
Blade.
Yeah, if you don't know how. Other news, I was recently on the Gundam at MAHQ podcast. That was a lot of fun. That episode is out. And I had something else, but I forgot. So,
are we going to be at Mega?
We don't know yet. We're still discussing.
Okay.
So.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, yeah.
So, yes, that was our podcast. It was great to have you all with us tonight. Once again, we are the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast. This was episode 63. You can find us at aaapodcast.com, iTunes, and Facebook. If you search for Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast, you will find us on either of those. The theaddnetwork.net, and of course, nerdnexus.com. Taking us out tonight is Baby Baby Love from the anime Moto to Love by Haruka Tomatsu.
What can I say? What else can I say about that anime? Baby, baby,
love. Sounds bad as a needless ending.
See you guys!
Good
night. Good night.
Bye.
Tamari komi kimete aruki desu no shareni.